Jazz and AJ, Premier Auto Group News.
Oh, man, you want to watch something on Netflix? I got the show for you.
What you got?
99.1 PLR, 95.9, The Fox, Chaz and AJ in the morning. Untold Crime and Penalties. There's an episode for the Danbury Trashers. Are you familiar with this?
The Trashers.
The Trashers.
Minor
league hockey team.
Okay.
From 2004-2006. Potentially owned by a modern-day Tony Soprano.
Okay.
And this team was something else. And they were all about fighting.
Oh, the bad boys of hockey.
They were the bad boys of hockey.
Like the Hanson brothers?
It was like the WWE and Slapshot combined.
Wow.
And it was just more about fighting. It was brutal.
Right.
The owner of this trash facility bought the team for his 17-year-old son.
Nice present.
17-year-old son is the general manager of the team.
That's cool.
He hires all of these, like, Bad News Bears kind of players.
Right.
Give me all the enforcers.
The toughest guys.
One guy had one eye.
Wow. They called him Lucky.
Two
Lucky
brothers.
Had one eye left.
They got one guy who played hockey, went to prison, beat up 8 corrections officers. As soon as AJ heard this, said, I want him.
Wow.
Then they were able to, the NHL went on strike. So every great player was available. They hire one of these great players.
Nice.
Comes in, they win a cup. I'm glued to this thing. If not for Alice Cooper blowing off our interview last night, wasting an hour of my time, I would have made it through the whole thing. But I'm halfway through. I'm fascinated with it. Section 102 was the infamous section of rabid fans. They sat right behind a visiting bench, and they were brutal.
Made life hell.
Brutal, brutal, brutal. As I'm watching this, I'm like, hey, that's Drew, our marketing director.
Drew! One of the nicest people on the planet.
One of the nicest people on the planet.
It's true.
I saw him like I've never seen him before. Screaming, yelling, holding up like death type signs.
Drew!
I'm like, that's Drew?
Drew?
I'm like, I knew there was another side to him.
He can't be this mellow.
No one could be that nice.
Yeah, murderous person, yeah.
That's what's great about hockey fans.
I posted a couple of the stills I grabbed from the special on our Instagram page. Drew is on the show now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Wow, you.
So the Trashers were, you know, they were the bad boys of hockey, and rightfully so. Those of us in Section 102, we were the bad boys and girls of sports fans.
Yeah, well, you called it trash or what?
There's no doubt.
Your nickname?
Well, we were talking trash. That's
nice.
What we did.
Nice.
We talked trash. And we had a great time for those 2 years that the Trashers were in existence. It was just so much fun.
It's really an amazing story. And only 2 years, it seems like they accomplished a lot in 2 years.
A lifetime, yeah.
It's amazing that, you know, there's a documentary about a team, you're right, that's only been around 2 years, whereas, like, teams that have been around forever,
no one cares.
Don't have a documentary or don't have, like, anything documented about those teams.
Or wins.
So it's remarkable that in those 2 years, you know, so much went on.
It's funny that when I saw the beginning of this documentary and the owner of the trash facility buys the team for his 17-year-old son, and you see the 17-year-old kid talk, I'm thinking, oh, this is bad. This is daddy buys you a hockey team. This kid was good.
Yeah.
Like, he learned really fast how to put a good team together.
Awesome
for
him.
Exactly what he wanted them to do.
Cool.
And they took good care of these players, and they motivated these players.
Nice.
AJ, his name was AJ.
I noticed. Thank you.
His name was AJ. And the funny thing is they announced he was president general manager on April 1st, April Fool's Day. So everybody thought it was a joke, but
right.
it wasn't.
It was
the real deal.
It was legit.
And you're right. He put together a terrific team. I mean, fighters, enforcers, but also, you know, a team that won. They made it to the Cup Finals the second year. They made the playoffs the first year. So it was a team that won. They didn't win the cup. They made it to the finals, and they lost in the championship round.
There was one scene where there was just this pummeling. This guy who was a corrections officer, or beat all the corrections officers, It's the very first game. It's opening night. Mayor Boughton is there.
Wow.
All these dignitaries. I think
Blumenthal was
Senator
there.
Blumenthal was there. And
listen to Drew's just loving it.
Right.
And the guy who owns the trash facility is up in the booth. And right before the game starts, the player gets handed a phone. And the owner says, as soon as the national anthem is over, gloves off.
Nice.
Okay.
You got it.
And that set the tone for not only the game, but the whole existence of the team.
Nice.
That brutal beating, that beatdown left so much blood on the ice.
Yes.
It stopped the game.
Wow.
Like
a big snow cone.
Yeah.
Yep.
Strawberry.
Wow.
How many games did you end up going to in between during events for the radio station at noon?
I ended up probably going to probably three quarters of the games over the 2 years. And I sat in 102, which was, like you said, right behind the visitor's bench. So 102 consisted of the first seven or eight rows directly behind the visitor's bench. And our job was to taunt and verbally harass the visiting team, take them off their game, get in their heads, and for 60 minutes, that's what we did. We gave the Trashers a great home ice advantage. We taunted the other team with insults, chants, antics, and we'd go like back and forth with the players and coaches, you know, with all sorts of crazy stuff. And we all had like gimmicks in the section. So we had this guy, Wilson. He would bring a body bag to the game. So when a visiting player lost a fight or got hurt, we would count to 10, like in a boxing match, and then go hold up the body bag and chant, body bag.
Wow. You were the 102 crew.
We had a guy that brought a truck horn to the game. He would, like, Big Mike would bring a truck horn. He would blast it over the visiting bench so the players couldn't hear each other. And it was great, like, during timeouts.
It's like a movie.
He'd be trying to, like, talk to his players, and he'd be blasting a truck horn over it, and he couldn't hear a thing. At all. So
I have to tell you, you have to watch this
section special.
I think I'm going
halfway through.
Yeah.
And it was 10:15 last night. I'm like, I have to go to bed. Damn it.
Right.
Well, it's so well done.
You got cool stuff to watch later.
So. You know, this explains so much about Drew, because I was like, how can he just like be in there and handle all of what's going on? It's nothing for him. He's been in the middle of
He's been seasoned by the 102 crew.
Exactly.
That's the thing. I always knew, since I've known Drew, there is some other side to him.
There has to be.
No one can be this nice all the time.
I take out all my aggression at the hockey games. That's what I do.
You know what? If anyone wanted to make a case for hockey in Connecticut, and there's an audience for it, watch that documentary, because if you do it right, they'll go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
absolutely.
I would love to.
Drew, great. Jennifer and I, it was like watching a child's dance recital, and every time your kid comes out, you're like,
there he is. There's our Drew. Who's that big boy?
I was sending pictures to Drew.
I watched the documentary for the first time last night, and all weekend long, I was getting texts from, like, people and, you know, messages on social media. Oh, my God, I saw you. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe I'm in it a couple times. I watched it last night. I think I'm in it, like, 10 or 15 times.
Wow.
Like, there's, like, the shots of me in the section. Right there.
You had great seats. So, and Section 102 is like one of the characters in this documentary.
Right, yeah. Active player.
All right, Drew, we're going to switch over to the sports guy, the announcer for the team here. So thank you and congratulations, man. You're part of a great history of Connecticut hockey.
Body bag.
Body bag.
Right.
Thank you. It was fun.
102 crew.
All right, thank you, Drew. Drew, our marketing director.
We got to call him 102 Drew.
102 oh, my God,
Drew.
We do.
Yep.
There's a picture we posted on our social media where you see Drew, and he's wearing a PLR hat.
Nice.
So, I love it.
He's the man.
He's the man. All right, let's talk to this guy now. It's Phil Jubileo, former director of communications and broadcaster for the Danbury Trashers. Hey, Phil.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Morning.
Good. So take us through it. First, answer this. When you watched it, did you say to yourself, oh, they got it right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a 90-minute film, and we played for two seasons. So there was a lot. And from the hockey side of things, when I tell people, you know, maybe 5 or 10% of the story was told, that's true. But if you really wanted to get a sense of what it was like to be a Danbury Trasher and part of the team and kind of what went on, this is the perfect film for you. You get it all in 90 minutes.
And you know what's amazing about this story is not only you see the building of a great hockey team by people who never did anything like this,
right?
But you see there's another subplot of the FBI investigating the dad. So there's this whole deal going on. It was really, really well done.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got something for everybody. Obviously, if you're not a hardcore sports fan, and that was one thing with McLean and Chapman Way, the co-directors of the film, they wanted to make this for a broad audience. So if you're a diehard hockey fan, you love it. If you're just kind of a documentary fan, you're going to enjoy it as well. It's really fun for, I don't want to necessarily say the whole family, because they're, you know, especially some of the violent aspects of the hockey side of things. Like, I wouldn't let my 7-year-old watch it.
Yeah, but grandma loves
it. Even though I'm in the film.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. You know, grandma's old-time hockey.
There you go.
All right, so tell us your story. How did they approach you? Where were you? And then your part of it and your interaction with, you know, Jimmy and AJ.
Well, you know, what's interesting is I grew up in the Bronx, but at that time, in 2004, I was working in minor league baseball in suburban St. Louis, Missouri. Like everybody else, I heard about the team on April Fool's Day. I did not think it was a joke. I quickly was able to maneuver an interview through the league office. Richard Brosell, who's the commissioner of the league, was prominently featured in this film, and he's a great character.
He is great.
Oh, he's awesome. And I was able to, because the league office was about a town away from where I live, I was able to work out with Richard and get a meeting with him first, and then Jimmy had me fly out during the baseball All-Star break. I drive up to Danbury. I'd never been to Danbury before to the garbage transfer.
In this documentary, they say that it's been said that The Sopranos was loosely based on Jimmy and his son AJ.
I mean, obviously they named the kid AJ.
Seriously, AJ. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's a bit of an urban legend, but okay. I will tell you that after my 30-second job interview, where the only question I was asked was, you know, how much was I wanting to make, and they agreed on my number without any discussion at all, which actually surprised me, I was hired, and then within a few minutes, I was shown this big, giant picture of to Jimmy from the real Tony Soprano, James Gandolfini. You know, so somewhere, somehow, James Gandolfini heard about Jimmy and signed this giant Sopranos cast photo to him. Was it really based on that? I can't say for sure, but obviously, same industry.
Right. Trash industry.
Right.
Son's name AJ. Similar characters. Anyway, so this is what you're dealing with, and now he owns a hockey team.
Yeah, and it's what I'm dealing with, but I'll be honest. My day-to-day was working for a minor league hockey team. I worked out of the rink. While it was crazy with signing all of the tough guys and having to deal with suspensions on a daily basis, because that's what kind of happened when you have 8 or 9 tough guys in the lineup. So 2 guys get suspended, they get another 2 guys and bring them in. So it kept me busy from that aspect. It wasn't much different than working for any of the other teams I worked for over the years.
Interesting. Huh. Did you know that the feds were investigating Jimmy?
When everyone else knew, and by that, you know, after the first season, and it's in the film, there's a big FBI raid, which was news in the area, and that's kind of when it became news to the rest of us.
You know, there was part of that rang a bell with me as I'm watching the documentary. I remember in Woodbury, there was a state legislator who was having a family problem with, like, an in-law or a boyfriend.
Okay.
And he called somebody at that trash plant for some help.
Hmm.
And unbeknownst to him, the feds were recording the phone conversations.
Oops.
Hmm.
And this is how he was caught.
Yeah, caught in the net.
Yeah, and so he ended up resigning. And he actually came in here the morning the story broke.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember, okay, so there's a connection between this and what happened with that.
Yeah, and that's, I guess that happened. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in when you watch the film. The filmmakers do a really good job kind of like going back and forth between you know, some of that stuff, and then the wildness that was the hockey on the ice. So it really kind of keeps you bouncing back and forth.
How, you know, it looked pretty brutal, the half of the documentary I watched. How much blood would you say was spilled in the 2 years that you were watching?
Like quarts, you know?
I'm sure quarts. I mean, there were nights where, you know, some of the bloodiest fights weren't even shown in the film.
Wow.
for whatever reason. Maybe there wasn't enough footage of it or good footage, because this was, you know, 2004. Not everyone had a smartphone to kind of whip it out and just start shooting stuff. But some of the biggest brawls, obviously they talk about two particular fights featuring Brad Wingfield. There were other nights. There was one guy that was banned permanently from the league, trying to basically, you know, maim the other team's coach. This was stuff that happened on a regular basis. There were many nights where the puck would drop and you'd have, within a minute or two, three or four concurrent fights, and, you know, everyone's in the penalty box and the Trashers are on like a 7-minute penalty kill. You know, this happened all the time. And, you know, you talked with Drew, who's a great guy. The fans in Section 102 definitely made it worse, because they just kind of antagonize. You think about it. The yeah. Trashers have all these goons on the ice and tough guys. And then you've got the fans antagonizing the players. So they're also getting even more annoyed at that. And they can't take it out on the fans, because you can't really go and attack a fan.
No, you can't.
So then they get out there and they think they're going to fight a Trasher, and it didn't work out well.
That's right. You don't really think about that. Can you imagine being taunted over and over for an entire game?
That's got to
After
suck.
A while, yep. Yeah, you got to take out your aggression.
Yep.
When Wingfield broke his leg or had his leg broken, what was that night like?
Oh, my gosh. You know what was interesting? And part of the story was Channel 7 out of New York was in the building to do a feature on Brent Gretzky. So they were there ahead of time. So I was dealing with a lot of that before the game, kind of helping to coordinate stuff. Luckily, they did their stuff and left, because this would have made news. This night was when, you know, Brad Wingfield got slew-footed, which is the dirtiest thing you could do in hockey. It really is. You would never think, of all the things the Trashers did, they never got called for a slew-footing penalty. Winger breaks his leg. This place just goes silent, and you hear the screams. I mean, this was straight out of, you know, this is the stuff that you couldn't make up for a horror film. You know, like, that's how loud it was to see this, you know, 6-foot-tall, 250-pound linebacker on skates with his leg broken. You know it was bad. And then afterwards, it just got worse. It was just a complete gong show. With the fights for the rest of the night. Ruben Nador really got into it, other guys as well. And that was the same night there was an incident, an argument between Jimmy and one of the officials. And they got into it after the game. So, I mean, it was just craziness.
Jimmy punched an official in the face, right? Wow. So he brought – so the team went into –
Allegedly.
Yeah, so the team, after the leg – broke incident, and everybody kind of knew, like, well, this guy's career is over now, and they loved this guy, and he was like really
adored,
the center.
Yeah,
he was the you know,
the star
of the team, but everyone looked up to him.
Yeah,
the team goes into the locker room. Jimmy comes in and says, "You saw what happened. What are you going to do about it?" And then all hell broke loose. I mean, it was fight after fight after fight. After it was,
they showed him
mayhem.
This is what we do.
Mayhem.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know what, just and understandably so. And I think that, you know, it was discussed in the film. But honestly, I think if that happened, something like that anywhere in hockey, you would see retribution, maybe not on that level, but you would see it. I mean, it's like even something like that, it's still part of the game. Fighting isn't really something you see a lot of anymore. But if you see a guy deliberately injure a teammate, yeah, there's going to be something that happens. That's just part of the game.
Shows you care. Kill. Yes.
The one thing that comes through, though, is that everybody loved Jimmy and AJ. Like, they really took good care of the players.
Nice.
And even the workers at the trash plant, where we've had a lot of emails and comments on our social media. They're like, I worked there. We loved him.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. Jimmy and AJ were fantastic. I mean, I tell people, they ask, like, well, what was it like? And I'm like, it was like, you know, it's family. And, you know, we had a premiere event last Tuesday at the Danbury Ice Arena. We showed the film on a giant screen. Hundreds of people came out. You know, some of them were guys that drove trucks for Jimmy, you know, at the transfer station. And a lot of the front office employees showed up. And, you know, many of the fans in Section 102 or just other fans from other sections showed up. It was a great night. And I think that was because of how much, you know, we all appreciated what Jimmy and AJ did, bringing the Trashers around and putting Danbury on the map. That was the first pro sports team they ever had. So
that's cool.
That's a legacy that'll last forever.
Did you get a chance to talk to Jimmy after the documentary, and what did he think of it?
He really liked it. I actually had spoken with him that morning. He had called me, and we spoke for a while, and, you know, was very happy with how the film was made, and, you know, really appreciated all the hard work from McLean and Chapman Way, the Way brothers, who are award-winning directors, for putting this together. This was a work that took about 2.5-3 years. We actually did these interviews about 2.5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So it took a while to get, you know, from start to finish with all the other episodes those guys had to put together for the series. But Jimmy and AJ were very happy with how it all turned out. And I thought, you know, there's stuff in it that, you know, no one, you know, when you're on that side of things, you don't really want to have to talk much about or hear about it. But they were very fair. You know, this was fair in terms of what you saw from the hockey side, you know, and the stuff that's news, because it was news as well.
Yeah, I really, as I was watching, I was like, you know, we don't get a lot of stories done in a Netflix special in Connecticut.
Right.
This was so well done. I'm really proud of it.
Nice.
You know?
Yeah, it was great. And just to see a lot of those faces. And then I saw them again, and I saw myself, I'm like, crap, I'm old. Because this was like 15 years ago. And I was on screen like an old clip. I'm like, where the hell did they find this? Like, these guys found stuff that I don't remember. I don't remember the video I was on screen from 2004. I don't remember that being shot. I don't know, like, what I was doing at that point. But I was like, oh, my God, I was a baby. And it was like everyone else. It was like, oh, my God, everyone got old. So, but still. And then, by the way, Jimmy hasn't aged a day.
Nice.
So that's
great.
What I don't understand.
Nice.
Yeah,
he looks
better great.
Now.
And he literally looks, yeah, he looks younger now than he did then. I don't know. But it was
so
crazy.
I don't know how it ends.
Rockstar.
But I'm assuming someone goes to prison and.
Well, you know, the team doesn't last.
The team doesn't last. Is there a hockey team in Danbury now?
You know, there is. They're in the FHL, and they're called the Danbury Hattricks. And they're in there. They didn't play last year because of COVID, but they have a junior team, but there's also a professional team. In fact, the former Trasher, Dave McIsaac, Diamond Dave, is the head coach of the team.
Oh,
and
wow.
Dave was a tough guy. Dave actually, in one of those fights in the first season, literally broke some guy's nose and then
nice.
Got suspended for the rest of the season. And then came back and played the next year with us and had a great year. It was one of his last in pro hockey. He was known for being a Philadelphia Phantom and, you know, has thousands and thousands of penalty minutes in his career. So, you know, there's all this talk about Brad Wingfield in the film and Winger's amazing and Ruben Nador. There were like 6 or 7 other guys just like them. I mean, that's what you had to face every night.
Right. They couldn't introduce too many characters in a documentary or you'd get confused or
right.
it'd be hard to
yeah,
follow.
It, okay. Yeah, absolutely.
You know who was great?
Know,
that
minutes.
Equipment manager. I want to get him on the show because he was a middle.
T-bone.
He was AJ's, I think, middle school hockey coach or whatever.
Yeah.
And he would slam these middle school kids up against the boards. And they asked him about that. He goes, yeah, cocaine will do that to you.
He's very
so
honest.
He becomes the equipment manager of this team.
Wait, no, stay
He's
up.
The only equipment manager in the history of hockey to be suspended.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's a nod
got,
right there.
You know what? And he got suspended from being on the bench for that entire season. So he was still working, but he couldn't stay on the bench during games. So he had to do everything and then go. And then, you know, you said there might be some clips of him in the box with Jimmy and AJ during the games. But so he had to basically do all of his work and then couldn't stand on the bench. We had to have like a stick boy or whatever hang out. But yeah, that's T-Bone. Like, that's not acting.
You
know,
could tell.
That is 100% who he is.
You could tell. He could be in The Sopranos. He could be in The Godfather or Goodfellas. He's one of those characters. It's just natural.
Wouldn't even have to act.
Wouldn't have to act.
Just show up and be you.
Yeah.
Right.
Bill Jubalowski, former director of communications and broadcaster for the Danbury Trashers, talking about the Netflix documentary on untold crime and penalties. What a great tribute to that team. What are you doing now?
Well, right now I'm the men's and women's hockey voice for Quinnipiac University on
Great.
ESPN Plus. I've been
nice.
Doing that for a few years. After the Trashers, I went right and worked. I did 9 years with the Bridgeport Sound Tigers in the AHL.
Nice.
So I went
cool.
right from the Trashers to the AHL, and and then from there to the National Women's Hockey League, and then also to Quinnipiac, where I am today.
Well, great. We'd love to check in with you time from time. I'm going to watch the rest of this special, and we may have more questions for you tomorrow.
Anytime, guys.
All right. Thank you, Phil. Appreciate it.